Hello, everybody. Welcome to Simple and Practical. I'm here today with interviewing Dr. John O'Riordan, MD, who is a top specialist in our region on the topic of transcranial magnetic stimulation that we'll be discussing today. Dr. O'Riordan was on the faculty of University of Pennsylvania for over a decade. He developed and ran the treatment-resistant depression clinic. He led the transcranial magnetic stimulation program, the ECT program, and he also worked with vagal nerve stimulation and deep brain stimulation. So he has extensive experience and expertise on the topic of using various devices. You know, actually, we affectionately sometimes just call him the device guy. And he has been involved in transcranial magnetic stimulation right from the beginning, and was the first author of a seminal paper, like a huge international study that was instrumental in introducing TMS, which was published in Biological Psychiatry, I believe, Dr. O'Riordan, many years ago. So let me thank you for speaking to us. I want to start by asking you, what is the reason for your deep interest in the devices in psychiatry?
Well, thank you, Rajneesh, for the kind invitation and your introduction. And my interest in devices comes from, I guess, a career-long interest in trying to develop new treatments that would be helpful to patients. And to a certain extent, at least up to now, some people might claim with some correctness that the psychopharmacology paradigm is somewhat exhausted without new mechanisms or treatments.
Right.
Psychotherapy has had great advances with CBT and so on.
Right.
But for sure, we need more treatments. Just like cardiology developed devices and then could make great strides in treating those kinds of patients.
Right, right. So since like cardiology has these implantable defibrillators, or they put in stents, they do things which alter the structure of the heart itself, directly intervening. Right, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and cardiology had behavioral things like diet and exercise. They had many drugs like beta blockers and ACE inhibitors.
Yeah.
Really, when they got devices, that it made a huge difference to patient outcomes. So I would hope the same thing would happen in psychiatry.
Right, right. Now, you know, in most medical specialties, the use of any particular intervention depends a lot on the person who's doing it. So if you had, you know, somebody doing a cardiac intervention, it would depend on the surgeon or the interventional cardiologist skill level. With TMS, my feeling is that a lot of TMS centers have come up. And I used to think that, you know, well, you can just refer to anybody because TMS is TMS. You press the button, it'll deliver TMS. So in what way do you think the person who's delivering TMS needs to be skilled in the use of TMS?
You know, you put your finger on it. The devil is in the details. There are just many, many different ways you can administer TMS. There's like fast frequency, slow frequency, left sided treatment, bilateral treatment, theta burst treatment. And you need two skills. One is the understanding and knowledge of that patient disease state.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't determine who's the right person for the treatment. And then you have to have a wide range of clinical experience administering TMS. You know, you need to be able to measure outcomes, so on and so forth. So it is definitely not one size fits all. And if you're going to go to a center, it's much better you go to a center that's been doing TMS for 3 years than one that's been doing it for 6 months.
Right, right. Okay. So the experience and skill is required in altering the different parameters and the exact details of how the TMS is being given. And I imagine that you probably alter that like as the treatment progresses, depending on how the person is doing.
Exactly. You start with a plain vanilla paradigm. And then that has to be customized to the needs of that individual patient.
Okay.
There are some centers that just give the same thing to every patient, and that does not make sense, is ill-advised, and it's not a case of one size fits all.
Right. So we won't get the best outcomes possible.
No.
So now, those of us like myself who are not experts on TMS, do not have a TMS machine, refer our patients to someone else like yourself, mm-hmm. like a leading expert on TMS. We are certainly in the Philadelphia area are very fortunate to have someone mm-hmm. someone like you who's accessible to us, so that we are not referring to like someone who's just, you know, started doing TMS 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. But so for us as referring clinicians, we need to know, like, TMS is used for like so many different conditions. Mm-hmm. But what is that, like, the top one or two? Like, what is the perfect patient if I see that kind of patient that I should think, hey, maybe I should refer him to Dr. O'Riordan for TMS?
The prototype patient is one with severe major depression.
Yeah.
We don't know enough yet about bipolar depression, but I certainly have treated a lot of bipolar depressed patients as well. They seem to do equally well.
Oh, okay.
They're invariably, they have treatment-resistant depression, and many of them have failed multiple trials and medications, so that's going to be a typical patient.
Okay.
In my own practice at Penn, we looked at 100 patients treated sequentially, and the average failed number of adequate trials was 3.5.
Okay.
So these people are highly TRD. Some people who come who've even failed ECT.
Yeah.
People you do not treat are people with major depression with psychosis, because there's no evidence there.
Okay.
Anxiety disorders generally don't seem to do that great with TMS.
Okay.
But there is important research going on right now in both OCD and PTSD, which could become potentially new indications for a TMS.
Okay.
Just fundamentally talking about severe major depression. Or patients who just happen to be highly intolerant to medications and nothing suits them, and TMS for that kind of patient is also a good choice.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, certainly we every day see patients with major depression who have not responded to medications. Unfortunately, we see them every day.
Yeah.
And we also see patients who are very sensitive to side effects, and because of that, they have had side effects on so many medicines. Mm-hmm. And TMS, I guess, because it has minimal or very, very minimal side effects, might be an ideal treatment. So that's a great point. Also, for bipolar depression, you know, no medicine really works really very well for bipolar depression. Mm-hmm. So that's another great point you made, is that we should also think of TMS for bipolar depression, even though that's not the main FDA-approved indication for TMS. So that would be off-label use.
And as you know, in bipolar, the game is really the long-term and preventing recurrence.
Right.
And not everybody does this, but TMS is also important as a maintenance treatment. And I have many patients do very well with one session per month and can maintain well into the future. That also might be particularly helpful in bipolar disorder.
I see. Because, okay, so that is important, because I think one of the problems with TMS is that the patient has to come every day initially, but you're saying later on they may come less frequently, even like as infrequently as once a month, and that could still be very helpful.
Just 12 treatments a year could keep that patient well.
Okay. Okay. So in a nutshell, like I see the TMS device that you use behind you in your office. How does TMS work? Can you just like explain to us like briefly?
You have a powerful magnetic coil that delivers focused magnetic pulses to the prefrontal cortex, usually the left prefrontal cortex.
Okay.
And this coil right behind me here delivers pulses at about 1.5 to 2 Tesla. So they are actually very powerful. And those pulses, when they hit the prefrontal cortex, depolarize neurons in that area.
I see.
And ultimately, in terms of neurotransmission, it seems to be primarily glutamergic. So you're actually promoting neuroplasticity and so on. Okay. A bit like, you know, BDNF-induced output. And basically, you have a circuit in the prefrontal cortex that links up with the amygdala and the limbic system that is offline in depression, is not working, is disabled,
right,
shown by neuroimaging, where that area is hypoactive. And then you restore normal activity to the circuit by cumulative magnetic pulses that you can show by neuroimaging have reactivated that area of the brain.
Okay. So you are applying very high, very powerful magnetic current to the prefrontal cortex, and really altering the functioning of the neurons, and even the growth and development of the neurons and their synapses. This is in ECT kind of does this by giving an electrical current,
right.
But TMS is doing this by using a very powerful magnetic pulse.
And there's a fundamental physics type difference, which is current immediately dissipates on the scalp. You can't target or focus it, so you end up with a generalized seizure needed to get the therapeutic effect. Here, it's subconvulsive brain stimulation because the skull is transparent to the magnetic pulses. There is no deflection,
Yeah.
So it can go straight to the prefrontal cortex and nowhere else.
Right, I see. So it can penetrate through the skull, which is a little different from ECT. And so there is no chance really that the patient would have a seizure with
there
TMS.
Is. The risk of that in the research studies where we did 10,000 sessions, there was no seizure
yeah.
in 10,000 sessions. So the risk is less than 1 in 10,000.
Okay.
So the risk is lower than using Wellbutrin, for instance, or tricyclic antidepressant.
Right.
I've been doing TMS since 97. Fortunately, so far, I've never had a seizure. There are precautions you should take to prevent that. For instance, you shouldn't treat a patient with a known seizure disorder.
Right, okay.
And you know, you treat within certain safety parameters. But if you do all those things, TMS is remarkably safe.
Remarkably safe, okay. Okay. So you the coil that we see behind you, do you physically hold that over there, or how is it held over the patient's head?
Well, initially there's a smaller coil, this one over here.
Yeah.
And you determine the amount of energy you need to depolarize neurons.
Yeah.
This guy here is used to deliver the session, and the positioning of the coil is such, and the weight of the coil is such that it does not have to be handheld.
Okay.
It rests on the patient's scalp, and the physician or treater can be in the room monitoring the patient. But they don't have to be doing that piece.
I see. So in your practice, does one of your assistants do the TMS, or do you personally, are you personally present and do you personally do the TMS?
I personally administer all the TMS myself.
That's great.
Right now, my practice, that works very well for me. There are many centers that use what they call a technician. That's okay, but it's probably not as good as a clinician who's well-trained, because...
Right.
The positioning of the coil is quite important.
Yeah.
And a clinician, technician needs to be on top of things in terms of, is this patient really getting better or not?
Yeah.
Or do I need to change the protocol? So in many of those centers, the psychiatrist is meeting with the patient about once a week.
Yeah.
And that is not as good as the psychiatrist kind of monitoring the patient day to day.
Yeah.
In practice, that's how it's going to be in many centers, because they're doing a large volume of sessions.
So the patient comes in and lies down on a chair, which is sort of similar to a dental chair.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the coil is held over the head, like with a stand, like we see the stand behind you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll position the coil there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what is the what is the patient feeling like? So typically your patients, like, how do they feel while they are getting the TMS?
They're not experiencing a mood change. They are aware of the physical somatic sensations of the pulses on the scalp, because the pulses will also activate the muscles and neurons. So it typically feels like a tapping sensation. If the energy is very high, it could get uncomfortable, but that ordinarily does not happen. The patient, even though you're working on the prefrontal cortex, can do other things. Patients will read a book, they will engage in conversation. And from my point of view, I'm engaged in conversation, but at the same time, I'm always doing therapy. I'm always doing CBT with them. Without them necessarily being aware, but I'm talking about their thinking, their outlook, their pessimism, you know, physical activation, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So it's a unique opportunity to do a two-for-one.
Very nice. So while the patient is sitting there, they are relatively comfortable. They might feel like a little tapping sensation on their head, but you turn your chair and you continue to talk to them while they are having the TMS.
And we know from neuroimaging that CBT is top down, whereas medications are bottom up from the brain stem.
Yeah.
So I'm working with them. I'm also activating the prefrontal cortex through the CBT, just like the TMS is doing through magnetic pulses. So hopefully we're having a dual effect.
Right. That's a terrific, very time efficient sort of thing to provide some psychotherapy. As well as, and I should just note here for our audience that Dr. O'Riordan also has very extensive training in cognitive behavior therapy. You were a fellow at the Beck Institute of Cognitive Therapy, I believe, and you are one of the founding members of the Academy of Cognitive Therapy, I think it's called.
I'll mention one other thing. When TMS was first FDA approved, the session lasted 38 minutes.
Yeah.
It starts to be fairly long to be in that chair, but if you adjust the protocol, as we've done in terms of the efficiency of delivery, you get the session down to 18 minutes.
Okay.
You can have a very efficient session, and at the same time can be doing some very nice CBT, you know, all fairly quickly. So when the patient leaves the office, they had quite an intensive treatment in that time.
Very nice. So the patient, you know, comes there and feels very comfortable. And when they leave, are they impaired in any way? Are they sleepy? Are they confused? Anything like that?
There is no sedation. There is no cognitive impairment. They are the same as when they came into the office in terms of alert. So the advantage of that, they can just drive themselves home.
They can drive themselves home. They don't need to bring someone with them.
No.
They can go back to work.
They can go back to work. Yeah, for sure.
So a person, you know, doesn't have to take the day off or to bring a family member, which is so much of a problem with ECT.
Yeah.
They don't have to take time off from work, so they can, you know, maybe just during their lunch break.
Yeah, may have patients come at 7:30 in the morning and just go straight to work.
Okay. So in terms of being user-friendly, it is just extraordinary.
The plus is really is like absence of side effects and high efficacy if TMS is done well.
Yeah.
TRD population with 3.5 medication failures, quite TRD routes to STAR-D, will still get a 60% response rate and a 30% remission rate. And some of the studies as high as 70%, about 30% less effective than ECT, but a very effective treatment for a low side effect burden.
Right. I was going to ask you that. So ECT still remains the most effective treatment,
right,
but we have to weigh that against the disadvantages of ECT and patient acceptance and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of patients are reluctant to do ECT, perhaps unfairly. There are a lot of centers in the U.S. that only do bilateral ECT, which is not the right approach. If you do bilateral ECT, more than 50% of people have memory dysfunction.
Yeah.
And but if ECT is done well, done right, it can be extraordinarily effective and has that advantage for psychotic depression as well. But it is in its own ways more labor intensive because you've got anesthesia, the side effects, you know, needing somebody to bring them to ECT, bring them home, and so on. So it would make sense in a clinical setting to do TMS before ECT.
Right. Try TMS first because of its various advantages, and then you always have ECT in case that's needed.
Okay. Then there's a strange thing, which is if they've already done ECT and failed, about 35% of them still respond to TMS, where you would expect none of them to respond to TMS. So sometimes that comes up too clinically.
I see. Okay. Okay. So if a person comes to you for TMS, do they have to get like the first session of, first they get an evaluation from you and then start TMS at the next visit?
Yeah, they have a 1.5 hour intake.
Okay.
Got to make sure you know what's going on with that person. You can't presume they're appropriate for TMS.
Right.
You should do some measures, psychometric measures of their depression. You have to discuss the pros and cons and risk benefit of this treatment.
Right.
Plus, you got to discuss the alternatives. What other options does that patient have so that they don't feel it's TMS or nothing? And you talk about the logistics of the treatment, of course. And I give them a little bit of time to think about it so you know, that they feel, you know. And I would say, look, the best person to decide what's right for you is your own psychiatrist and yourself weighing things. You know, so I think that's the right way to be. Proper assessment and be fair to the patient.
And then how many days a week do they come for these short sessions?
5 days a week for 6 weeks.
Okay.
It's kind of a funny thing, but there is some literature showing that 3 sessions per week might also be effective. But when they are pretty TRD patients, we don't want to take that chance.
Right.
So it's 5 times a week.
For 6 weeks.
Each session about half an hour and so on and so forth. And you get improvement in the first 10 sessions, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
Hope for it by 15 sessions, and you expect it by 20. If they're not getting better by 20, you really have to think about what do I do next. That might be a good point time to introduce something really novel like Theta Burst TMS. If they get respond or remit by 30 sessions, then there's a taper phase of 6 sessions over 3 weeks.
Okay.
3 week one, 2 week two, 1 week three. And now they are better, hopefully, then you go on to maintenance. It's not a good idea to not do maintenance because you're going to have like 50, 60% chance of relapsing in the next year.
Okay. So maintenance treatment is very, so the taper is very important. And then for them to continue to maintain, some maintenance TMS is also very important to keep them well.
Yeah, it's a two-part problem, getting you out of the hole and keep you from falling back into the hole again.
Right. the same as with medication, we continue the medicines even after the person is better.
Yeah, all of these diseases are long-term games. As you know. You have to fight for the long-term
Definitely, result. Definitely. Now, during this period that you're treating with them with TMS, are they continuing to take their medications?
Typically, yes. You use TMS adjunctively. The reason for that is it can be quite difficult getting people off existing medication.
Yeah.
You also have the situation where the patient and even the psychiatrist thinks the medication do nothing.
Yeah.
Take them off the medication, then they're a lot worse.
Right.
One of the nice things about TMS is you can combine it with any medications, including MAOIs, safely.
So there's no contraindication in terms of...
It's like what we call a non-systemic treatment.
Yeah.
It doesn't go through the circulation, the liver, blah, blah, blah. And you can combine it with any existing treatment.
So typically, like, you have such extensive experience, say, you know, you said since 97.
Yeah.
So 18, 19 years you've been doing this. How do the patients respond? So if we had some of your successfully treated patients here with us, and we asked them, what do you hear from them about how do they feel about TMS?
The ones who got better?
Yes.
Well, obviously, they're extremely happy.
Yeah.
They got better, didn't really have any side effects. They're often, as I said, very TRD, had many treatment failures, felt they were at the end of the line, were very hopeless and despairing, often the case. They get better, they're, of course, you know, feel so much better about the future. They can, you know, go back to work, things like that that they have not been able to do. So for them, it's obviously a very positive experience, but then, you know, that's not always the full story. There are also those who didn't get better and those who make what I would call a brittle recovery. It's quite hard to keep them well.
Right.
They wax and wane, and sometimes you just got to stay the course.
Okay.
Or it might be quite important to keep using the TMS and at the same time change the medications.
Yeah.
So many of these patients have never had an adequate trial of an MAOI or a tricyclic or whatever it might be. So the TMS needs optimization, but so does the medication. And for that matter, maybe they never had any reasonable therapy.
Yeah.
Therapy also needs to be optimized. It's like a three-legged stool, therapy, medication, and TMS, or a device treatment.
Right, right. That's a great point. Like, they work synergistically. Mm-hmm. And so if the person, some people will get better with TMS, have an excellent response. You said maybe 30% remission, meaning they hardly have any symptoms, and another 30% have improvement.
30% remission at the end of the acute course,
but
you keep at it, these people keep improving.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
I've had patients who needed, you know, 60 sessions to get a more complete result.
Right. So we hope that our patients will be in that category. But if not, then there can be other changes made in how the TMS is being delivered, plus also adjusting the meds and psychotherapy simultaneously. You know, we have to keep working on it with this difficult-to-treat population.
Very frequent, probably by now, annoying statements that I'll say to the patient, I entirely understand you feel very, very hopeless given your illness and how much you're suffering, but that does not mean you're a hopeless case.
Right.
There's always hope. There are many things we can do to help you,
right.
And, you know, we got to stay the course together.
Right. We must instill hope in the patient,
So
now in terms of, like, before we end, I want to talk about, like, why TMS is not being used as frequently as it is. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, it is growing slowly. There are 600 TMS sessions and TMS centers in the U.S. now.
Okay.
The biggest barrier, of course, has been financial. And the insurance companies have this trick where they say it's FDA approved, but that doesn't mean we have to offer the treatment. That's an insurance policy issue.
Okay.
So they don't pay for the treatment. Now, fortunately, that's finally changing. There are many more insurance companies now than before. Medicare pays for it. That's a big step forwards. But it's not like, you know, a regular medical treatment where it wouldn't even be a question. You still got to jump through all these hoops. All I can say is that I hope it keeps improving, but there are a lot of situations where the patient pays out of pocket. The fee depends on where you go and what center.
Yeah.
It can be anything from like $250 to $450. And the cost of a course of treatment in 30 sessions might range from $8,000 to $12,000. So that starts to be very, very expensive.
Yeah.
Why some centers charge $350 and $450 is beyond me. They don't need to charge that month. That's excessive charging that's going on there. We ourselves charge $225. You know, I always felt strongly, what's the point of developing a new treatment if nobody can afford to access it?
Right, right.
It's not particularly the psychiatrist's fault, it's that the insurance companies have been discriminatory.
So you're saying Medicare, though, is paying the supports the entire cost of the TMS treatment.
Yeah.
So if the person has Medicare, then cost may not be a barrier because Medicare would approve it.
Yes.
Would you still have to get prior authorization from Medicare, or can you go ahead and do TMS?
That's actually interesting. There is no prior authorization for Medicare. You can just put the patient in the chair and treat them.
Okay.
And and I think then what happens, I can't remember exactly whether the patient pays you and then they claim back, but whichever way it works, Medicare covers the entire cost.
Okay.
Except they might pay $200 per session rather than $250.
Right, right. They won't pay the full fee.
Co-pay. But for patients who are over 65, this is a great thing because so many of them do get bad depression.
And what about like people who have private insurance plans like Blue Cross Blue Shield or Aetna? Mm-hmm. Are you able to get prior authorization from some of them? Are you able to do TM? When I say you, I mean like our clinicians able to get prior authorization?
Yeah, it's changed quite a lot in the last couple of years. So the very simple way of going about it, I just give the patient the treatment code, ask them to call up the insurance company, give them the treatment code, and right away they get an answer.
Okay.
If you call up the insurance company and say, I want to have transcranial magnetic stimulation, they would say, we've never heard of that treatment. We don't cover that treatment.
That was experimental. Yes.
But they actually might even have a policy covering it, but the person answers the phone has no idea. So you got to give them the treatment code, and then you get an answer very quickly.
So what is the treatment code? Do you know it off the top of your head?
90868.
90868. So they should call the insurance and say, I'm getting a treatment, and the billing code for that treatment is 90868.
Yeah.
And they can put it in their computer and tell them whether it's going to be covered or not.
Exactly. It short circuits the whole process.
And then if, unfortunately, the patient doesn't have Medicare, their private insurance is refusing to cover it, then if they pay out of pocket, it would be somewhere in the ballpark of $250 per session, maybe more. Like you said, there's a range of how much people charge.
You have to shop around, and two things, well, how much do you guys charge? And the second thing is, how long have you been doing it?
Yeah.
Two things you'd like to know, I think. And then the word of mouth is also important in terms of, you know, people had a good experience there. You know, you don't want a situation where the psychiatrist just sees you every 2 weeks. There needs to be more frequent contact than that. And, you know, go for the evaluation and hopefully you'll have a good experience and then you'll know that would be a good place to go, you know.
Right.
And, you know, and you can go to different places, but proximity to your home is probably also important so you don't have too much driving.
Because you have to go frequently. So, Dr. O'Riordan, this was extremely helpful. In a very short period of time, you have given us the gist of like what we need to know. And, you know, I certainly feel better informed about TMS after speaking to you here. Where is your practice located? Where do you
treat? I'm in Voorhees, New Jersey, which is about 15 miles from Philadelphia.
Okay.
And we do all our TMS here. And there are a few other centers in this area. But I think we're the best.
In my mind, I have no doubt about it. I mean, we are very fortunate in this region to have someone like you who just happens to be practicing in our region, who has expertise in all of these device stimulation treatments. Can you share with us what is your website so in case people want to find out more about you?
I better look it up here, just make sure I don't get it wrong.
I think it's John P. O'Riordan.
Yeah, I don't want to trouble the P. John P. O'Riordan, MD.com.
John P. O'Riordan, MD.com. And I will certainly add a link to that website in the show notes that will accompany this.
On the website, there are like some videos of TMS. You can see, you know, how do we actually administer the treatment and some information on it and links to some publications, that kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
And I find patients are very good at tracking these things down. And they come to you nowadays pretty well informed, you know, about, you know, what you do and how you might, you know. But I definitely want to end by thanking you for this very nice opportunity, which doesn't happen every day, to share with my colleagues some more information about TMS. And I do think it's a very useful treatment, and I hope patients will be able to get more access to it.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. O'Riordan, for speaking to us. And I want to just end by saying, you know, that we don't all have to buy TMS machines. We don't all need to go and get extensive treatment, training and experience in TMS. But we should definitely be aware of this utility and refer patients for TMS to other experts, even if we ourselves are not experts in doing TMS.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Thank you.